There's a divine salt.
I eat this?
You can eat that. Yeah.
Oh, those are actually
salt bush leaf.
Okay, have you ever, like, to me, they taste kind of like the smell of tomato plants.
Brett, look at the camera and tell me what you think.
It would be good, like, on a salad.
Yeah. With pulled pork or chicken?
Pulled pork.
Brett does not like chicken. I've learned that so far.
Oh, really?
We were at a restaurant last night, and I ordered a salad, and I said, ooh, with pulled pork, that sounds great. And then she said, we don't have pulled pork. And I said, well, what else do you have? And she said, chicken. And I said, yeah, but, like, what else? So what'd we find?
This is salt bush.
Oh, this is what I ate. So how much do I need for a salad? Probably this whole bush.
Yeah, quite a bit right now. But they are really prolific. Like, all those bushes behind our house.
There's tons of bushes behind our house.
And they have larger leaves, right?
Yeah. There's a lot
of them. They'll probably taste better.
Yeah, they would taste better because these ones are drier.
Oh, this is getting pretty serious.
This one's a little bit interesting.
Can you carry Brett down?
Yeah, I can help Brett down. I can grab the camera or...
Let's see.
This is the serious part. That's why.
This is the only part that's hard.
Okay.
It is true, but...
Do you want me to take the camera for a second? Good. You're good? All right. So I'm going to.
Just don't hold on to any branches. They will snap on you.
Right. They're don't rely on branches.
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't rely on the ground.
Don't rely on the ground.
that will probably crumble.
I'll be right here. I'm just going to spot.
Don't rely on limestone.
Exactly. This is why I had to go back
and
change.
But it's up to you, man. I mean, you know, I'm 32. I'm not that much younger than you.
Right. There we go. Awesome. There you are.
I grew up in a similar environment to this, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you want a minute to kind of...
We'll do it when we get back. Way, but all right. We're probably not going to walk on the ledge.
You can if you want to.
I mean, like...
You want to get up over there? I'll get up here, and then I'll help you across the hard part.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
I want to... Hey, Dad. I want to walk...
It is. I feel like I want to jump up right now. Do you think I should wait for a better spot?
No, it depends. That's pretty easy to climb up right there. If you do kind of what I did, you'd get up on this ledge, hold up on here, but I would need to probably hold your zoom for you if you want to come up.
Yeah, sure. You can.
Are you sporty?
Sporty?
Athletic. That's the word.
Athletic. That's the word. See, I'm so not athletic.
Or you can go Ellie's way. Ellie's way is pretty easy.
I like sporty.
Go ahead, Ellie.
I want to start using that.
What if I just jumped?
If you can, like, parkour, then go for it. All right. If you can do, like, sporty parkour, then...
Sporty parkour.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Yes. I'm so impressed.
Sporty parkour.
That's right.
Can that be your new nickname, Brett?
Hi, everybody. This is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks. Today is December 26th. I hope you're having a lovely holiday. What you're going to hear on the podcast today is just a snapshot. 45 minutes of audio really don't do this experience justice, but just a snapshot from what was easily one of the finest afternoons on the entire School Sucks Across America tour. It was back on Wednesday, November 15th, outside Albuquerque, New Mexico. Nick and I drove up into the mountains to meet a home educating family, Kristen and Michael, and their daughter, Ellie. Now, country singer Michael Martin Murphy, who I'm sure you're all familiar with, was not exaggerating in the slightest when he called New Mexico the land of enchantment. It's enchanting as hell. But the combination of our surroundings with actually getting to experience firsthand how this family lives and what's important to them and how they express that in their daily lives, it was just a really moving experience. And it was the experience I needed on day 3 of the return trip and day 32 of the overall trip. I know I mentioned this in the drive journals and probably once or twice on the podcast, but both on the way out and on the way back, the beginning of the trip was quite stressful. Staring down the road into the unknown, if you will. Doing this whole thing for the first time, on the way back having to do the whole trip, you know, with somebody else in the car who ultimately turned out to be a delight, but also having to do the whole thing in 11 days. So, you know, the morning before we headed out to their house, I was definitely in a heightened state of anxiety. We had made a last minute hotel decision. Turned out to be in kind of a sketchy part of town, and it was a super sketchy hotel. When we were unloading the car, I noticed that somebody had broken the back door to the hotel. So it didn't lock, as you would like a hotel exterior door in a not-so-good part of town to do. And we, you know, we had a lot of valuable stuff to store in the hotel room, so I went to the front desk, and I pointed this out to the night clerk, and I feel like there was a bit of a language barrier, but I feel like she kind of snickered at me for expecting this door to not be broken. And I remember I had to stand by the door in a bit of a vigilant state, keeping watch as Nick unloaded thousands and thousands of dollars of camera equipment out of my car and brought it to the hotel room just to make sure that we weren't being cased by bandits who had premeditatedly broken the hotel doors just to have one less obstacle in their plan to rob two naive out-of-towners. Not me, not us, not tonight, I said as I stood watch by the door. So, yeah, I guess I'm not describing the best night, but in the morning, when we headed up to Placitas, to Michael and Kristen's house, 1.5 hour after feeling completely on edge, wandering around outside a hotel, wishing I had a gun, there we were in this beautiful setting with this beautiful family listening to their amazing story about how they got to where they are. And in this brief conversation, there were a lot of really valuable reminders and lessons for other young families who are trying to make home education work. And Nick and I, there was just a moment where we were standing there by ourselves, just like looking at the New Mexico landscape. And I feel like we almost both had tears in our eyes. And Nick said something to me. I don't remember the exact quote, but I totally, like, being here, I understand why you wanted to do something like this. I'm reluctant to say he said this is what School Sucks Across America is all about, because I've said that like 9 times now. And in that moment, and there were several of these moments that afternoon, but this was the most memorable. I just felt incredibly grateful to be able to share this experience with all these folks. And it was really very inspiring, you know, hearing this story and then just thinking about how many people there are actually out there in this audience and beyond who are willing to work a little harder and think a little deeper to be able to cut their own paths. And I left their house feeling really appreciative, like for this almost immediate renewed enthusiasm and optimism for the week ahead. And it turned out to be a great week. As much as I like the idea of having a nice fancy studio with lots of acoustic foam and Shure SM7B microphones, we recorded this podcast kind of in a desert. I worked pretty hard to get the audio quality to be as good as it is, but we were also filming for Nick's documentary, and while we were walking around in this amazing backyard, I saw a bench kind of precariously situated on a hillside near a small canyon that, if things went wrong, we could have fallen and tumbled down into, even though I'm exaggerating for dramatic effect. But I said, this is the spot. This is where we should film. And therefore, it's also where the podcast was going to be recorded. So before we get started, thank you so much to Michael, Kristen, and Ellie for opening your home to me and to Nick. Oh, and happy anniversary to Michael and Kristen. That was 3 days ago. Thanks for listening, everybody, and take care.
Created one of the most impossible interview locations. We're sitting on a bench at the edge of an arroyo, which I've learned today is a small canyon, and it's just great to be here. This is so relaxing after what I've been through in the last, not that it's been terrible, but just in the last couple days of like driving and traffic and the city. This is a really beautiful place. I wanted to ask first how you guys wound up here.
Based on feeling.
Yeah.
We'd been in the South and in that humid climate for a long time, and it just was a little bit stressful, I guess, for my constitution, and I just really was craving some desert time. I was telling you how I love Arizona and Sedona, and so I was like, let's try New Mexico, because I've never been there. And I was just, we started looking at places online, and I was specifically drawn to come to Placitas. I had no idea what it would be like. And so we found a place to stay here, Airbnb.
Mm-hmm.
And what we did actually is we stayed in three different places on the mountain, the Sandias.
Yeah.
So that we could experience each part, because they're all very different from each other, which is surprising. And this was a place I just totally fell in love with. It. I was like, I could live here. I could see this being the place.
It's incredibly tranquil. It was just, I was commenting to Nick, it's funny how fast things can change, you know, out here.
So true. Mm-hmm.
From like this morning, rushing to check out of a hotel in a city to just 25 minutes away. There's this.
Yeah, we have that feeling every single day.
Every time we come home.
Every single day, because I don't leave the house every day. I don't, you know, but every single time we come home, it's kind of like amazing. Like, it's like, okay, 25 minutes ago, I was in, you know, this somewhat, you know, Albuquerque's about 700,000 people metro area, you know, big city for out here. and now I'm in a place where you hear a car, I don't know, every 10, 15 minutes, maybe.
We mentioned to you, as we were pulling in here, I was talking about how extraordinary the landscapes were and how alien these landscapes are to me.
Yeah. Totally.
And as we were turning by your road, there was a sign that said, "End school zone."
Yeah.
And we thought that was, because right before that, we were commenting that, like, wow, if you were going to do self-directed education, this would be the place, especially for people who, you know, enjoy and appreciate the outdoors.
Totally.
So then we turn down the road and it just gets more spectacular.
Yeah.
And then we meet you folks. And the first thing that we do is go outside and we get a tour of the area from your 8-year-old daughter, Ellie, which is just, and it's not even over yet. We definitely have more to see, but I wanted to know why the decision to do education at home, or I guess outside of school. There's a problem with the sentence, "do education outside of school," as if there's a guarantee that it's happening inside of school.
Yeah, totally.
But what you're doing is definitely out of the mainstream, right?
Yeah.
90% of people do something else that involves, you know, concrete buildings with small windows.
Totally.
Even in this beautiful area. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
So how did you guys make that decision? Why was it important for Ellie to have that experience?
Yeah, I mean, Kristen, I would say, spearheaded that mostly when we first were together. And we're kind of serious people, I guess, in a way, like just thinkers, I guess. So, you know, our first date, we were talking about,
how we wanted to educate our children.
Yeah, how we want to educate our children and, you know, all that stuff. So it's like, which is pretty ridiculous. I don't know. I was like 20 or something like that. I don't know. We've been married. Well, I guess we'll be married 12 years this December.
I don't.
2006. Nope.
Okay,
11
can't
years.
Do that math right
yeah,
now.
11 years this December.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And you're a young couple.
That's yeah, we're young. Yeah. We got married young, but it's worked out for us.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So why
sound
did
like
you?
Like you're surprised. What?
I mean, there's always times where you're like, I don't know, but no.
It's been a good ride.
It's been good. It's been a lot of crazy changes and stuff. I guess more, I don't know, maybe on the inside or ideologically, and the way that we choose to live our lives in 11 years, but we've just kind of changed together and grown together and found ways to deal with disagreements if we do happen to not believe exactly the same thing, which we don't. But we agree on the important things, I think, or we figure out, like, how can a situation serve everyone.
We encourage that in our family anyway, for everyone to have their own beliefs. You know, we don't want to create some kind of belief system that's rigid. And that's, even though I was raised pretty traditionally, that's how my parents still raised me, is to think for myself, and I didn't have to agree with their beliefs. And that's a lot of how we choose to interact with Ellie.
Yeah.
Why did you want to homeschool? Or like,
because
you
I
were
was
pretty
homeschooled.
Much, yeah.
Oh.
All the way through. All the way.
And you were public schooled.
I was mixed. So I did 10 years of private Christian school.
Over here.
And then I did 1 year of normal public school, which was my sophomore year of high school. And then my junior year, they had this option for independent study through the public school system where you just went 1 day a week to take tests. And school was always easy for me. So I was like, and I could graduate in a year instead of having to do two more years of high school. And I didn't like high school. So I was like, yeah, I'll do that. So I did that and then, you know, graduated high school.
Now, Kristen, what was it for you? Was it religious or was it just...
My parents just, they were just not very conventional with the way that they did things. And so my mom was just really interested in it. And so she just did it. And then it just turned out really well. And we, I'm the oldest of five kids. And so we were just a really close-knit family. And I mean, we were raised Christian and conservative Christian, but... we didn't even fit in the conservative circles that we were in. So we just, my mom and dad,
you guys
just,
were too wild.
We were pretty wild. My mom, like they didn't really, I would say they were more like the, you know, gentle discipline type. And so they kind of let us just speak our minds and we're five sort of crazy people and
very independent,
yeah,
all strong personalities.
And none of you ever went to school?
Well, actually the three youngest ended up going to school for to public school for part of the time. I just want to make sure that wasn't Ellie that I was hearing. She went up to the house to get her jacket. I don't think so. I think it was a dove, but you never know. Sometimes Ellie sounds like a wild animal.
Yeah, that's true.
Or a domesticated one. She does a pretty good dog bark.
So it didn't go so well, and Kristen would, you know, tell male pastors that they were wrong in church and stuff like that, you know.
Being I wasn't even going to go there.
Being a girl, but...
Oh, we can go there. That's totally... I'm really actually interested in that story. And did you... I'm trying to think of the most sensitive way to ask this question. Did you notice differences in your siblings' experiences growing up versus yours? And I'm not school? Like fishing for something like, yeah, school ruined their childhood. I'm just curious because that's interesting. You know, I grew up in a family of me and two younger brothers. We all had extremely uniform school experiences, even going to the same schools. Oh, wow. My middle brother dropped out when he was 15. And, then by the time he was, you know, 18 years old, he was extremely successful in the automotive business, right? So that was like a one thing that's like, oh, what was different for him? And it was getting on with his adulthood faster.
Yeah.
So I just wonder if you had any, again, not fishing, but just any observations like that growing up.
Well, they weren't really, coming from kind of a more sheltered and, you know, experience, they weren't really prepared for public school, and it was pretty harsh for them. It was also, I mean, you know, and this is, I guess...
Get as controversial as you want.
The place that they lived, it was not what would be considered a good area for public schools either. So there was just like this double whammy there.
Yeah, and the detail of that's, I guess, relevant to your audience too is, you know, it's like, it's out in the country, you know, it's a poor area.
Yeah.
You know, mostly poor, you know. And it's out in the country in Tennessee, and it's like, I don't know. I mean, for me, it's like, you know, everybody's like, well, that's why we need public schools, is to have these, you know, these places for these kids to go in these poor areas.
But we tried that, so.
But it's like, then you see the quality of the school there.
Mm-hmm.
That is apparently, you know, important for society.
It was harsh, and so the third oldest in the family, she decided to finish early, and so since when she was old enough, you know, like 17, to stay at home by herself and just finish up her education, she did that. She's like, I don't want to do it, I can't do it anymore, and my mom's like, that's fine. And then it was really my brother who stayed the whole time.
Graduated from high school.
And there. Graduated from high school there, but he doesn't recall it fondly. And then my youngest sister, so there's 11 years between us. It just got so, you know,
it really got bad. And so we just ended up taking her out. And then I partially homeschooled her, and then my mom did. And so she never went to high school or anything. Forgot about that.
Yeah, I guess what that happened in like seventh grade for her or something like that. Seventh or eighth. Yeah. When she was taken out. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I was just interested in each of your backgrounds and how that shaped your approach to your own family. So Ellie, even though her name wasn't known on your first date, was going to be home educated. That was decided then.
I was absolutely. And, you know, Michael had concerns about it at that point.
Yeah.
But
so
I was like, there's no way. And I want to also say that I'm not really against any type of schooling, really. But at that point, I was just like, there's no way that I'm putting my child in school 5 days a week. I'm not going to do it.
And I was, so like I said, school came easy for me. I never studied and got straight A's and that sort of. I mean, I remember studying for tests and stuff like that once in a while. You know, I'd look over the material. I wasn't very athletic as a kid. And that was where I got approval, you know. That's where I got an adult saying, good job. And, you know, you did great on this because you got the best grade in the class or whatever it was. And so that kind of prepped me to be an academic.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Pretty much not want to leave that environment where, so you get into this kind of intellectual academic thing, and going to school that whole time, you don't really think of that being possible outside of, I mean, I didn't really think it was possible outside of school in a lot of ways. I didn't think it was possible to pursue the intellectual interests that I had outside of a university system or, you know, outside of some sort of institutional educational system.
When did you start to figure out you were wrong about that?
Man, not until after we were married, probably. I mean, I taught school for a year. So I graduated.
What'd you teach?
High school when I was 16. And then I graduated college when I was 20. And then I went into grad school studying philosophy the next year. And while I was in grad school, I taught at this small private school in Charlotte, North Carolina, is actually where we spent our time before we moved to Tennessee for about 5 years. And I had, let's see, 9 middle school students and 4 high school students. As in the entire school.
It was
9 middle school students and 4 high school students. Extremely, like, kind of interesting religious school. But anyway, putting that stuff aside. So I taught kind of almost everything. Mm-hmm. So I mostly taught English. I was hired as an English teacher. So I taught English, Spanish, health, and Bible because it was a Christian school.
Mm-hmm.
So we had Bible class. At that time, I was still very much sold on traditional education. We got married that year in the middle of that school year on Christmas break. I couldn't take any vacation time, so I just took our 1 week Christmas break, and we got married on December 23rd and, you know, had our little honeymoon before coming back.
Yeah.
And, at that time I still thought, you know, the best bet for these kids who were, mostly kind of more like inner city, they were a mix of inner city Charlotte, which was
pretty rough.
Yeah.
You know, poor black, basically most of them.
Yeah.
And country white. And that's pretty much the mix of students I had.
Yeah.
So pretty much all poor, all in inner city Charlotte, right across the street from the school was the projects. You know, that sort of neighborhood. And
kind
I thought
classroom.
That was the best bet for those kids.
Yeah, that would be their best education. Chance. Right.
Yeah.
What kind of classroom environment did that create?
Gosh. Very interesting. I mean, granted, I was young, so I try to, you know, make myself feel better about that.
Michael is also naturally a disciplinarian.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, so I was the youngest of three kids.
I'm still breaking that out of him.
I was the youngest of three kids, and we were a super chill family. Like, you know, I mean, at this point, I would be like, well, we were emotionally repressed, you know, socialized, and, you know, believe we had to follow this behavioral standards. But you know.
You still thought kids should behave.
But at the same, yeah, at the same time, I still thought kids should behave. I met her family for the first time, and she's the oldest of five, like she said. And
we are.
And they're so wild and strong personalities and all that stuff. And I'm pretty mild-mannered, pretty introverted. And they're asking me questions like, how much money do you make? I'm like, you don't
have
ask those questions.
Have you ever done drugs?
Yeah, like.
So you probably still had some pretty young siblings when you guys met, right?
Yeah, Emma, my youngest sister, is younger than Ellie.
Yeah, she was 7 when I met her. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. You know, I had this exact same experience with a classroom culture when I worked at a boarding school in Vermont. Because it was a boarding school, so we pulled kids from Washington, D.C., like the inner city. And those kids were Black and Hispanic. And then we also pulled kids from where we were in Vermont, and those kids were white and from trailer parks.
Yeah, exactly.
And I saw, you know, a lot of the same challenges that were related to lack of resources, lack of invested parents, toxic communities and cultures surrounding them. But it's unfortunate. It's so similar to like a lot of the problems, like the cultural and social problems we're seeing now. It wasn't like, hey, you know, if we drill down beyond appearances, we have a lot of the same problems. You know, we're in the same boat. It was just, you know, this idea, you're white and I'm Black or vice versa. And those are things to fight about. And that never, we could never get it down into, you're all in the same boat. And that was something that, a frustration then that I think it makes me sensitive to a lot of things that are happening in the world today with a lot of this identity stuff.
Yeah.
So 1 year and you were out and you guys are married. Yeah, so a lot changes in that time.
We were married. I realized I wasn't making enough money because now I was married and I had real bills and I wasn't living with four guys in an apartment paying $200 a month.
Yep.
You know? And I'm like, $400 a week actually isn't a lot of money. That's
we surprising. All remember the day that we realized that, yeah.
And it was just rough teaching there, both because of the religious climate, and even though I had a lot more traditional religious beliefs at the time than I do now, it was still, to me at the time, toxic doctrine, right?
Yeah,
but my favorite thing was teaching. What he did.
I mean, you would never be able to do this in public school where you just kind of make up your own curriculum.
No, you can't.
You can't do that.
He did that.
So I just did that.
But he didn't tell the people, like, who are in charge.
This is exactly, I have the same story. That's great. So, like, our health textbook all come from this place, and I'm sorry if someone uses this for their homeschool curriculum, because some people do.
Yeah.
But it's called Abeka books or Bob Jones books. And they're the most, like, traditional Southern Christian books you could imagine. So our health book told boys that the godly haircut was a short haircut that was trimmed at the sides and so long. And this was in our health textbook, and I was expected to teach this.
So at this time, you guys are married. Are you ready to start a family?
No.
No?
No.
What were you doing?
I was...
you did more interesting things than I did.
Well, I was a nanny, and then I was the music director for a private company that did after-school lessons.
Yeah.
So, and we were, there's just a lot more to the story, but we were really looking for an opportunity where we could make some kind of residual income and we didn't have to put in hours every single day because we wanted to work on projects that were important to us. And, you know, we consider ourselves both artists, you know. You guess you don't really, but he's a writer.
I don't use that word, but yeah, I mean, like back then it was like maybe I'd like teach as like an adjunct professor somewhere and write books. It's pretty much, that was my desire at the time.
So we were really hoping to get that type of financial situation in place before we had a kid.
Right.
And then, so let's see, it was 3 years. She was born 3 years after we got married. And she was like a surprise. But, but like, I mean, it's good too, because I feel like if it had come down to making a choice, I just probably never would have made it. Because it's just, it probably would have never
felt that we had the right foundation. Because like, until, I don't know, even a couple of years ago, I wasn't comfortable with our financial situation. Yeah. And I still, I mean, I just have have issues there.
You know, I'm still very like, high standards.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, well, I'm not making as much as this guy over here.
So I'm 40 now, and I've watched in the last 5 years all my friends have kids for the first time. When I actually thought I had, I never really thought of it like super consciously, but I had this kind of support group of other adults who weren't doing this.
Yeah.
I just never, you know, I felt like part of it was that all that experience. I mean, that kind of teaching experience that you had, I was, I did that for years, you know, totally. And I really just felt like, number one, I was burned out by kids.
Totally.
And number two, I was burned out
after a year. So
as kind of a troubled young man, I was like, oh, I really see the impact that I could have, right? From the, you know, the kind of parenting that these kids had.
Yeah.
I was like, God, I would never want to put in. And I think it was more subconscious then, but, you know, that affected me quite a bit. But, as I've watched all my friends have kids in the last few years, like from age, you know, 30 to 40, I've said that thing, right? Like, well, you know, it's just like, when will the time be right? When will the situation be ideal?
Yeah.
And my friend who had just had his first daughter, he said, time's never right. Exactly. Situation's never ideal.
So true.
Just do it.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, once you find the right person.
Yeah. Ideally, you can have that, or you know, maybe ideally.
Right.
For us.
So when you guys first met and started dating, and like we go back to the first date conversation, by the time Ellie was born, you were probably different people, right? I mean, you're growing up, right, through your 20s as this is happening, and by the time she reached, you know, the age she is now, you're probably different people. Somewhat from the time.
Very different.
Yeah.
So how did the education vision, the family vision change? Or in what significant ways did it change, I guess, over that time?
I want to guess for you, though, I think you and I talked about this, is that you became so much more pro...
anarchy? I mean,
well, I was going to say student-led learning, but it's really specifically homeschooling in the sense of, like, her being with me after you bonded with her and saw what it's actually like to have a child. Cause he was the youngest.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't really know, you know, closeness and experiences that you can have really. And, you know, I helped raise my four siblings.
I mean, going back to some of your other podcasts on the tour, you know, you say, what's your school sex story? And for me, it was definitely gradual. It was a gradual process of being like, huh, you know, maybe academics, I knew academics wasn't for everyone, but I just thought that was because those people, I am just going to be completely honest, it's because I thought I was better than all those people, right?
Yeah.
Because I was told I was better my whole life. What? You got the top grade. You're the best
in the class.
It had been
quantified.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right? Quantifiably, I have a higher IQ than you. I have a higher test score than you.
Right,
you
right.
know? These are all quantifiable measures that I can have superiority over you through. You know, the point is that I kind of had this elitism, I guess, on that academic side, and it took me a while to realize, I guess. I mean, I think through teaching, through having a child, through not going down any sort of career path that I thought I was going to, having tons
of
different jobs.
Pretty much nothing working out in our lives.
Pretty much. I mean, that's how it felt for a very long time. It's just like, man, life's just hard. And life, things don't work out, you know?
And then you get through your 20s, and it is a lot better, I think, once you get into your 30s.
Yeah.
Depending on what you did in your 20s, maybe. You know, I mean, for us, it has been.
Yeah, we've had found a lot more peace.
For the people who are just listening to the podcast,
so she's got
Ellie's bringing something over for us to see.
So this is a pinon nutshell. Which, it's past pinot nut season, so that there's nothing in there besides rot.
But yeah.
There you go.
Ellie, what's this? The
treasure she found.
It's like a soft plant.
Is this edible, or should I not?
Probably not.
Okay.
Well, let's see what Ellie has to say. I'm always curious.
I don't know what it is.
So would you recommend somebody eat it if they don't know what it is?
No.
Yeah. What are there rules for foraging around here?
That's the first rule.
That's a good one. It allows you to forage another day.
Exactly. Right.
So Ellie, what's your favorite thing to collect around your yard here?
I really like collecting pine cones.
Pine cones? And what do you do with them?
Just collect them.
And you have a little rock collection too, I saw. Mm-hmm. What's the best thing to eat in your backyard?
Probably saltbush.
So is that the thing you gave me a little of? And it tasted like, what does it taste like? A tomato plant? It tastes like a tomato plant smells.
Yeah, and I have to say that because you can't eat a tomato plant. So mm-hmm. That's why I say.
Exactly, yeah. I'm sure I've had that experience when I was little, exploring in the garden.
This smells good.
So, Ali, we were talking about just how nice it is where you live. How much time do you get to spend outside here each day? Or how much time do you
trip? Half.
Half the day?
The day.
Yeah. And you've explored, like, all around this area, even on the other side of the... Have you ever been on the other side of this canyon here?
Yeah.
Yeah? What's over there?
Well, we climbed that hill.
Yeah? All the way over there?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we've gone up to the top right? Where those rocks
are. Oh, this hill right here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And those are rocks up there?
Yep.
Wow. Is there anything else up there?
What were we searching for up on that hill?
Wild horses, and we saw them.
Yeah.
Like 100 feet away.
Wild horses? How many?
Like 10?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I just think it's really great that you get to live in a place like this and spend so much time outside while you do it, or while you live here, because it's just so beautiful here. And there's probably a lot to explore. I mean, I was pretty excited just by what we saw in the first half hour I was here. And I don't know. So like when we were driving up, we were, and I used the word extraordinary, you know?
Yeah.
And then we were talking a little bit, like, well, maybe if you live here, this is just normal. Do you get used to this?
Well, it's only been 4 months.
Yeah.
That feeling, though, I slow down to feel that every day.
Because yeah.
I would never want to lose that. And it is, it's incredible. And the opportunity that we have to live here. And so I don't really think that feeling will ever pass, because I think that's kind of... it's also kind of a choice. It's like what you're going to focus on. And like, this is what was really important for me and for us to have in a, you know, a home situation. So.
Absolutely. You know, I can relate a little bit just by being on the road for 32 days and having places that I need to be, you know? So at times I'll have to like shoot from one place to another. There's actually going to be a lot of that in the next week.
Yeah.
And I've done that a couple times by myself on the trip out to California, and I get to my destination and I say, oh, thank God I'm at my destination. And I said, well, wait a minute, what did I miss? You know, what didn't I have a chance to appreciate? Yeah. And then it also, I kind of realize that when I'm driving too, I'll be like, got to get to the destination, got to get to the destination. And then I can catch myself in the moment and say, oh, well, what am I missing?
Yeah.
But I think it's a great situation where, you know, both of you have work or interests you can do right from where you live. Mm-hmm. And Ellie's not rushing to the school bus. No. In the morning,
and don't rush to anything.
Yeah, and you guys get to live at a different speed than I've seen a lot of people live, and that I've caught myself living at sometimes, like just too fast, not present.
Well, we
enough.
Were like that before, Ellie.
Yeah,
you know, and that's one of the things, you know, that Ellie's definitely taught us, and she's the reason.
Look at this tree; it's a fairy tree.
Oh, it's a fairy-sized tree, little pine tree. You know, I really think, you know, she's the reason that, that we're in a place like this, because she showed us that this is most important. She's never liked, and it's a little different now that she's 8, but even just a couple years ago, she doesn't like to be in a car. She wants to be on foot. She wants to experience things with her hands. She wants to be in a location that she can be, you know, feel free in.
Yeah.
And so we really needed to find a place where we could do that. And it's funny because I've had people, like I'll meet people in Albuquerque and they'll say, so what's your favorite nature spot that you've found in this area so far? And it's like, my backyard? I mean, this is the best place ever. You know, like we'll go and have our picnics, right, Ellie? We'll just set a blanket up anywhere, and every spot feels like a new spot because there's just an unending amount of nooks and special places here.
We did day camping the other day. We set up a tent over here, and we couldn't see any other places. It was just like we were in the middle of the wilderness, mm-hmm. and set up a tent and spent our day doing tent stuff, being outside.
That's terrific. I would. That's what I would do if I mm-hmm. lived here, for sure. Ellie, where'd you live before this?
I forgot.
I can imagine that you would.
Yeah. Like, was there anything before this?
Yeah.
Where'd we move from? We moved from Tennessee. What was it like where we lived in Tennessee?
A small town?
Yeah, we lived in a small town called Oak Ridge.
What was our house like?
Apartment.
We lived in a second-story apartment, huh? 900-square-foot apartment. I mean, there were lots of grass outside. We played in the grass a lot.
Yeah.
When it snowed a couple times. It snows a little bit in East Tennessee.
Yeah.
We take our sleds out, and we'd hike through the forest there. Lots of pretty forests.
Are you like it a lot better here, Ellie? Yeah, I could see that.
Well, she misses. Don't you miss it, though, sometimes?
Yeah. Sometimes.
We had a lot of really good experiences there, too. Like, we really... it's one of the things that I think, before we got to this place, is we really focused on, if not now, when. So it's like, yeah. We have, like, you know, really focusing on loving the apartment that we're in. And because we spent a lot of years thinking, like, oh, this place is not that
great.
We
had this really nice apartment in Charlotte.
And we just complained about it.
And I just hated it. I mean, I just complained about it all the time. And just thought it was terrible.
And we look back and we're like, it was beautiful. What were we talking about?
Yeah, and then we see pictures of it and it's like, oh, this is a pretty nice apartment. Like, this isn't bad. But I was just so, my expectations of life were so much higher than what life seemed to bring to me.
Yeah.
So that is, pretty much what we try to focus on is making sure that we're getting our time in nature now.
So we were in this apartment that was built back during the Manhattan Project because that was in Oak Ridge.
Mm-hmm. That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so that's where we were. The town we were was the Manhattan Project, Oak Ridge. We have Y-12 nuclear plant right down the street, that sort of thing. So these apartments were built in that era, and my point in just saying that is, like, they're old apartments, but we were so much more happy and thankful in that apartment than we were in Charlotte in a much nicer apartment.
It was considered a luxury apartment.
Yeah.
Just because we had gone through this journey, grown up a bit, I guess, but also had just life experiences where we're just like, man, we really want to be grateful for our surroundings, and we want to make the most of what we have right now, because we spent so many years of our lives sacrificing the now for some future reward. Mm-hmm. It's what they, that's essentially like the plan. And college is, it's like, okay, I'm going to finish grad school and then I'm going to, maybe get a doctorate and move on to teach college or something,
Yeah, and you're always kind of deferring happiness Absolutely. And presence and satisfaction for the payoff that's coming.
When you turn 55 or I guess 65.
Eventually.
Right?
Yeah, who knows?
Well, yeah. And with a kid, I mean, that's the thing though is... people will say, oh, you have all the time in the world. It's like, no, you don't. Your child is only 8 months. I mean, then it's done. Every single phase is different, from the next. And so we wanted to, that's why we had the goal for a long time, for Michael to work from home.
Yeah.
So that he could take her out for a hike when the weather was good in the middle of the day, and to make his own schedule like that. And
so, yeah, I mean, it took years, but that was the end goal, not the complete end goal, but, a big milestone for us was to have complete location flexibility and time flexibility, where if I, if it rains one day, I can work that day.
Yeah.
If it's sunny the next day, I don't have to work that day. I can take Ellie out. We can go do fun things,
But we weren't willing to sacrifice just anything to get to that point, because that was what was really important to us, is because it's like then we would miss all the time that we had at that moment. There were a lot of people that I knew, they're like, their husbands had second job, and sometimes the women had two jobs, and there's nothing wrong with that, but it was like, I mean, obviously, it was right for their situation, but for us, for me, I really wanted to have that family time and just really believe, and that's what I think it came down to, and for both of us, that we had to believe that there was another way. Like, if you want to get somewhere to a certain goal that you don't have to do it through the whole thing. Everyone says blood, sweat, and tears. I wasn't willing to do that. I'm not going to sacrifice my health. I'm not going to sacrifice our family relationships, our peace of mind. I feel like we really did that. We were able to have a lot of like really good family time in the last few years, even when it was really difficult.
Yeah, even during hard times. Because there's lots of challenges in life, of course.
And I think I just came from a place where a guy 25 years older than you, Ernie Hancock, was saying exactly a lot of the same things.
Yeah.
And this is wisdom that had accumulated by the time he was your age, but not always with him when he was raising his four children. Yeah. So
I struggle with it.
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, like I struggle with not working more because like I could work more and make more money. I could work 60 hours a week, 70 hours a week. And because of the way that I've set up my work, I would make however many more hours I work, I make more money.
Yeah.
You know? So I could increase my income by 50% if I wanted to. But we're actually talking, and even though this was honestly a little bit of an inner struggle for me, we're talking about like it's coming up for a time for me to renegotiate some things with my contracts. And we're talking about, okay, instead of renegotiating just more money, why don't we renegotiate more money with having to work less hours?
Yeah.
How can I work less? How can I...
it's not even about working less.
No, it's having, right?
Having to work a certain amount of hours.
Being required. Mm-hmm. So I already don't have to go into an office.
Yeah.
I already don't have to deal with... You know, I mean, this isn't going to be true for anyone that works at home, but I don't deal with a lot of workplace politics. I don't deal with the stress of traffic and all of those kinds of things. We don't have to get her to school in the morning. She wakes me up every morning.
Yeah, it was so special. It really is the most special thing is that, like, so, you know, with the whole daylight savings, you know, it doesn't matter. Like, our whole schedule is based on when she wakes up and when she goes to bed. So we plan everything, you know, all of her classes. I mean, we do things outside of the house too, you know, but we choose all of our times based on that.
Yeah. And, you know, I had the dad who worked 60, 70 hours a week.
Yeah.
And then it was like, you know, and he thought that was the best thing for the family,
totally.
You know?
Yeah.
And then in the times where we actually did have time together, there was more pressure on that time and on everybody to make that time special.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there's also the thing the old band says, like, you don't get to the end of your life and no one says, I wish I had worked more, you know?
Yeah, right.
But to not have that situation where family time or downtime is so precious that everybody has to, you know, perfectly perform. I mean, it's like everybody had a family duty that had to be performed in that time.
God forbid somebody was in a bad mood that day.
Exactly.
Or was going through an emotional thing.
That's what we deal with. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of things that are important to us that we feel like is just not built into a lot of American culture, like having time to process your emotions.
Yeah.
When does that fit on somebody's schedule? You know?
Yeah.
And so that's what, you know, like exactly what you said, to take the pressure off that if you just need to spend some time by yourself or you need to have a discussion or... We're almost done.
Ellie, are you ready for the next thing now? Yeah, we're almost done.
We need some water.
Oh yeah, we're in the desert.
I know. Yeah, we need some water. We should have brought water down here. I didn't think about that. And I know she, of course, would like another hike, but
I think this is a great point you're making, and we could end with this. Your last part of that was,
I don't know,
Nick.
I was just it was probably about the time.
You were talking about time to process emotions.
Yeah.
Discussions that you need to have, and the culture, the formal and even the pop culture is always just wanting to keep you moving, keep you focused on the next thing. Like, I think what you were saying earlier, Brett, about it being in the car and not, if not now, when kind of attitude. It's like, no, I need to get to Dallas. We need to get to Dallas.
So what did we do yesterday that honored the not now, if not now, then when? We stopped at a casino.
Yeah.
Right. And I said, no, you know what? It says Route 66. This is part of the trip. I know we have to get where we're going, but I'm pulling into this place. Maybe
That's
we'll
awesome.
Stay here. Maybe we'll gamble. We didn't. But It was too sad, Nick said, but it
what,
was...
What about the double-decker trains that we started looking out for double-decker trains?
Yeah, we pulled into the desert for a good 45 minutes to do filming.
Yeah, that's awesome.
You know what? The only time is now for that's me right. yeah. in the New Mexico desert.
Yeah,
so well, quite possibly. So, you know, if I have to push a little harder later on to get where I'm going, that's fine. But I think I think that's so true, and something that I didn't realize until I was in my mid-30s, this idea of presence, not just with the people you care about, but also with yourself, you know, so you can be there for the people that you care about, so you can be present with them, but it starts with, you know, self-care, you know.
If you're constantly, like, living in the past, living in the future, you know,
yeah.
it's like you don't even know what's really happening, and if you're working for the future all the time and your work isn't meaningful to you, maybe. I mean, I've had many jobs where it just was, did not freaking care about what I was doing. And part of that was me being immature and having a bad attitude about it. But like, how can we make the best decision for right now? Like where Ellie's at, it's like, if I took a day off when she's 18, why does that matter?
Right.
Like we'd have more time together. I'm sure it'd be fun. I'm sure it'd be great. But if I did a 4-day work week now, how much more stuff could we do? How much more fun could we have? What other projects could I work on? You know, like I am trying to get some educational software products going and, you know, specifically tailored to more of like unschooling self-directed learners. If I'm working all the time, I don't have time to do that. I don't have time to do these projects that could end up being way more income than any other time anyway, but that's not really the point. But like having an opportunity to build a product or build something that is a lot more meaningful to me than, you know, maybe something else.
If you do decide when she's 18 to start working a 60-70 hour work week,
absolutely,
yeah,
you know, it's going to be more, she's more independent, she's probably not going to want to spend a lot of time with you at that age, so
and you'll be slightly older than me, so that's awesome,
yeah, right,
because I still feel plenty energetic, you know.
It's so true, man.
Yeah, this has been really great. I really appreciate you guys having me here and Nick here and sharing all of this stuff with us and with my audience. I think, you know, I was going to ask some kind of stock question, like what advice, but you've provided, I think, so many good suggestions for people who are, you know, young families trying to figure this out.
Yeah, I had one more thought, if that's okay.
Yeah.
I listen to a lot of things and it seems like, oh, their life is great. And, you know, like, oh, yeah, I'm going to do exactly what they did, you know? And I just feel like our focus and kind of our one of our family themes or whatever you want to call it is, like, really finding an alternative way to live because we, like Kristen said, we kind of opt out of a lot of American culture. We opt out of a lot of
institutions. There's a lot that we like about it, too.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are. There's a lot of great things
but
about
we
it.
We want to pick and choose. That's kind of...
But
it's like a prickly pear cactus.
We want to be intentional
about... Don't bite it. Oh, was that your point?
We want to be intentional about each aspect of our life that, you know, that we spend our time on. And, like, I mean, to me, I'm just more interested in seeing more and more people that want to build their own life the way they want to build it, not because of some great idea that they heard on a podcast or, you know, not because they think that the only way they can work remotely or they can have any sort of freedom is learning how to code, which, you know, it's like you can do that. It's great. But it's like I just want, like, to me, I am excited about or I'm interested in seeing a bunch of different people have alternative ways of living that are outside of the what society says is okay and outside of what society says is normal, but is unique for them. And for me, it's like, I used to be kind of like, have this saviorist mentality, right? Where, I mean, where you want to like teach everybody and you want to save everybody and you want everybody to think the way that you do because you think it's the best way to think.
Oh yeah.
And
that takes a while to get over.
Oh man. Long time. And I still get mad and I still rant about things that people think, but.
Okay. It takes forever to get over.
Yeah. Right.
Completely.
Really like, if that's working for them, that's great. And, and we just want, you know, for me, like I want the freedom and the opportunities and the life that I get to choose and not that's chosen for me.
Right. Absolutely. And it was, you know, one of my goals was to move across this country and back and try to collect, you know, those unique stories and experiences. And you guys definitely provided an awesome one today. So thank you so much.
Thank you. And it's just such a pleasure meeting you guys. And yeah. I just feel really honored that you let us tell some of our story.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you. There are some